The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. It's Wednesday, July 29th. May I suggest something? One, that you recommend this podcast to a friend. Word of mouth goes a long way, so we appreciate that. Two, check us out on YouTube, youtube.com/pick6. If you listen to this podcast regularly, if you appreciate it, if you're one of the Pick Sixers or Pick Six Pack or whatever else they call it, go to youtube.com/pick6 and subscribe, even if you don't plan on watching it there, because it'll help us out. If you do plan on watching it there, guess what you can see? Pew, 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 pew! A Brady Quinn football show. Brady Quinn in the house. What's going on?
Not much, Will. Look, I've missed the Pick Six podcast. I've missed you, buddy. I missed all the super friends as well. I have been hearing some things, though. I have been hearing that, unfortunately, this show has been going in a bad direction, my friend. So let me just say from the get-go of this show, I am here to bring hope, to bring optimism, because we're playing football, baby. Get ready for this season. They've got it all ready to go. College, NFL, we're going, all right? You can mark my words on that.
Okay, so I don't think I've been scaring people so much as I've been maybe a little cooped up and perhaps venting my concerns. One guy got mad at – he's like, how dare you – anyway, I'm not going to dive into that review. But I will say this. I don't think I've been pessimistic. I think I've been realistic. I am not confident at all that college football is happening. I hope it does. No.
Okay, here's why I tell you I'm confident it's going to.
Okay.
Yeah, because they've been on campus since June. So think about this. We're just now talking about what happened with college football way back in June. They brought the guys on campus. They were doing workouts. Some places stopped. Some places continued to keep going. And some had battles with outbreaks of COVID, right? Well, they're all through that now. And so they've gotten through it. They've built up antibodies. And they're moving forward with the plan. So you could actually make the case that they're ahead of where the NFL is, because the NFL kept everyone separated and quarantined, and now they're just now facing some of the reality that, yes, some of these guys are going to get COVID, and some of them obviously are going to be, you know, impacted by it to a degree. But by and large, you know, they're going to be able to move through this season. They just have to have a plan for those who are impacted by it, whether they're asymptomatic or worse.
All right, so I'm – that makes me hopeful. I've been telling people that ask me, I get asked this a lot in my personal life. Yeah, see people at the pool like, what's the deal with football season?
Yeah. Are we having football?
Brinson, you know everything. Football happening? I'm like, oh, first of all, I don't know anything.
Like we're playing catch right now. Am I going to be able to play catch with Timmy once I get in the football season? Because I don't know what I'm going to do.
First of all, my son has figured out this new trick where he's like talking to somebody about football. I'm like, Robbie swims up from behind me. And he's surprisingly strong for his size.
That must be from AK. That's not from you.
Yeah. It's from the milkman or something. But, he'll get underneath and get my legs and just like flip me. And now I have to play along a little bit, but like then he'll drag me around the pool as I'm floating around. Yeah. Play along. No, I mean, he got me leveraged pretty good a couple of times, but, yeah, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm not confident about college football. I am, John the Jones said this last week. So I'm 100% confident the NFL plays.
Yeah, 100% confident in the NFL, but I'm also 100% confident in college football, because if we really want to have a conversation about what's best for, and you can even make this case, by the way, for NFL players. But again, going back to the fact that they've already been on campus, there is no better place for college football players, probably most student athletes, than being at a university that is probably not going to have students on campus. They're going to be quarantined to that. It's not like there's stuff going on in some of these small college towns. It's not like bars are open or some of that stuff is open, right? And so they're going to be quarantined off from everyone else, and they're receiving nutrition, medical attention, the strength staff,
meals.
Well, sports psychology too. Like, we act like this doesn't impact them from a mental health standpoint. Where else are they going to receive that? Like, most of these players are better off being at campus in the university with their support group, as opposed to being at home where they're only going to potentially subject the loved ones or the people they're living with to the virus. And they might be getting in trouble by going out and so forth. So the idea that anyone wants to present to me that it's better for these guys to be quarantined at home is asinine and it's stupid. And it's one of the reasons why, again, like, college football is going to play and the NFL is going to play. Are we going to have guys who test positive? Yeah. But this isn't, for the most part, an at-risk group. For those who are at risk, I think they should either opt out, like they've been able to do in college football, or opt out, which they're able to do, and in some cases incentivized to do in the NFL right now.
All right. Well, let's talk about that. As I, you know, we saw, and I think this is something, this is why, you know, you're a former player, former first round pick. Played a, how many years you play? Eight, 10
in the eight.
Well, look at me. I see. Yeah. And by the way, people ask, where's Brady? I said, I don't know. You know, like I Brady's a tremendous guy.
I'll give you the answer. There's contractual obligations. I only have so many days. And because
someone who will remain nameless, because we don't like to name our coworkers on this podcast, someone screwed it up so badly that we didn't have Brady on here on a regular basis, because this hypothetical person is too overeager and like jammed Brady's days for the summer through May and June, and we lost him for a stretch, but now we got him back. Anyway,
yeah, that's the reality.
Nameless person. So we saw a bunch of Patriots players opt out. Okay, let me ask you this. When you saw the Patriots, actually, before we get there, I'm a little ahead of myself. When we talk about the opt-out, so if you're a high-risk opt-out, you can get a stipend. You know, so like Star Lotulelei of the Bills had heart issues coming into college. Maurice Hurst, who was out of Michigan?
Maurice Hurst, yeah.
Yeah, remember, he had the heart issue. So like, so somebody like that, if they wanted to opt out, they could get a $350,000 stipend with no offset. You get an accrued season, but your contract does toll, just like it would for a voluntary opt-out.
You don't get an accrued season, is the best of my knowledge.
Contract tolls, you don't get an accrued season. That's right. And the same thing with the voluntary opt-outs. You would get a stipend. In other words, they don't want to just throw you to, you know, throw you in the streets because you're, you know, you're saying, listen, man, it's for my
family. Right.
But you will not get an accrued season. So you're losing one of the seasons you would play. That's kind of a tough spot to put players in, but guys are going to make choices based on their own decisions. So I'm curious about the Patriots. To see six guys opt out almost at the same time, to me, felt like Bill Belichick went to his team and said, listen, I will respect whatever it is you need to do. Some of you have different situations at home. Some of you have different personal medical situations. Do what you want to do, but I would love for you guys to let me know as soon as possible, because the Patriots now have a huge leg up in terms of salary cap space and knowing what needs they have for their roster to go after remaining free agents. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I think it's a good theory. I think the other theory, though, is, you know, you're reporting to training camp. Yeah. And so logically, today's the report date. And if you're going to report, but you're still on the fence, like, aren't you defeating the entire purpose, right? You're going into a facility that's going to have all these people around, 80 people in some cases, maybe 90, and you're subjecting yourself to potentially getting the virus by doing this. What would be the point of doing that? So, like, if you're going to opt out, I know they pushed the date to August 1st.
Yeah.
And they're talking about maybe delaying it even further. It's like, why? Like, if you're going to show up for training camp, and mind you, they're not getting paid yet. Like, you don't get paid until you actually start playing games, you make the team. And so why would you need to bump it back? Like, well, I think
– the argument would be the same as, like – so like we have this deadline of today actually to sign up for virtual school for the fall semester of elementary school. And it's either, you know, plan B or virtual, whatever it is.
Right.
Like the further back they push that deadline, the happier I am personally, because the more knowledge I think you have about what is happening. Now it's more than likely not going to make a difference in our decision, but I guess that's the argument. It's like, if I'm opting, cause you're losing a ton of money by not playing. Like if you opt out and somebody pops up with a vaccine, can you opt back in?
No. And that's part of the issue, right? Is you got to make a decision by this point in time. Now, is there going to be a vaccination let's say they push it back a week or two? Oh. Of course not. At earliest, I think Oxford Group had talked about having one by September. I think that was even a little bit advantageous thinking on their part. So we're not going to have a vaccine by then. Right. And again, to go back to like, we're finding more information again, what's going to change in 7 days, 10 days, 2 weeks? Nothing.
Oh, the NFLPA will sign their agreement, but nothing will change. Right.
Right. But all I'm saying is like, nothing's going to change as far as the conditions that they're working under, that they're going to be within. You're really only subjecting yourself and your family to the potential of getting the virus and yourself to injury risk. Like, you're there practicing and running around doing different things. What is the point of that? Like, I think any player who waits, it's like, well, you reported to camp and you got tested and you figured out you probably were negative at this point. Cause if you were positive, you'd be quarantined. And, you know, at that point in time, I'm not sure. Maybe you can opt out. Maybe you can't. But again, it doesn't make sense to wait until that particular date. So I think it's one of the reasons why you probably saw a lot of guys on the actual date in which they have to report to camp, because I'm not going to, like, knowing what's in the CBA, I'm not going to go ahead and subject my family and everyone to a potential risk if I'm on the fence about it. Like, I'm going to make a decision and say, okay, I'm not going to go. I don't want to have to live for the rest of the season based on the rules that they're putting forth, or, you know, I've got a family member I'm concerned by. I mean, look, that's Marcus Cannon had an pre-existing medical condition. He was one of the players who opted out. Dante Hightower just had a baby.
Marcus Cannon, not Marcus Kennedy, right?
Marcus Cannon, yeah.
Fine. Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a Marcus. Oh, no, it's Maurice.
Maurice Kennedy. He's a cornerback, played at Virginia.
Right, by the way. Yeah, sorry, totally. I was just making sure. Marcus.
Well, let me quickly just go through case by case, and I think the different
reasons. I have a question for you. Would you play this season?
100% would play. 100% would play.
And you have no reservations. You have three young daughters at home.
Right, 3 under 4, which, you know, they're not in the at-risk category.
It is something that you would, I mean, like, it is something that would go into your risk-reward weighting of it.
Sure, and it was something that I'd factor in. But again, you know, looking at the numbers, looking at the data. I think if you're getting tested every single day, you know, you'd be at the peace of mind of knowing, at least initially, and then depending on how they test throughout the course of it, whether or not you're going to be at risk. So I don't have any reservations. I'd go do it.
Okay.
But every player is going to have their own way of doing it, right? Marcus Cannon had a previous medical condition, much like you talked about with Star Lotulelei. So it makes sense why he'd want to opt out and not take on that risk. You've got Dante Hightower, Patrick Chung. Chung, who, you know, again, and Hightower, both family situations that they're concerned by. And it could be a kid. It could be a relative. It could be their wife. Their wife could be the one pushing them, saying, I don't want you to go because I don't want to be subjected to that. Now, in the case of Danny Vitale, Najee Torrin, who was on a futures contract, Brandon Bolden, you know, those three guys, it's all interesting. And even Hightower to a degree, because he was going into the last year of his contract. And I do wonder that if I was a player who I felt like, I don't know if I'm going to make the roster. I don't have preseason games to showcase myself. I don't have the opportunity to prove it in a preseason game. And like for Brandon Bolden, look at the running back group. I mean, you've got James White, Rex Burkhead. They just drafted Damian Harris. They've got a kid who's a college free agent that I love in JJ Taylor who could make the roster. And if I'm Dan Vitale, I'm thinking to myself, if Tom Brady was here, we're going to use a fullback a lot. If Tom Brady's not here, I don't see Cam Newton being our center a bunch, probably in shotgun, probably with one running back. If I'm playing, it's probably because we're in goal line, short yardage, special teams. Like, maybe that's a decision that if Cam Newton's your guy, you're not going with a fullback as much anymore because your quarterback can run. So your tailback becomes that fullback now and that lead blocker in most of your personnel sets and most of your formations. So, you know, in some of the cases, I do wonder if maybe they're getting advice from their agent, or maybe they're looking at it saying, I can get $150K now because that's the minimum they'll get by opting out if they don't have a pre-existing medical condition. And then I can kick the can down the road to where they have to make that decision if they want to cut me a year from now. And it's not going to hurt me in any way outside of not getting an accrued season, but I'll get a six-figure payout. Because think about it. Let's say, for example, this is Brandon Bolden's last year. If he's not going to make that $150K if he goes and plays and gets cut, right? And he doesn't make a roster the rest of this year. Now, that's playing a gamble and a risk, but you're still taking on that risk next year. The difference is you at least had $150K from it, and then you try to find out whether or not you're going to make that roster next year.
Sure.
But wouldn't you want to try to go into a season where if you felt like you were one of those guys who was on the edge, you had the chance for an offseason either to get cut and then join another team to prepare yourself, or even a preseason to play games and everything else. So there's a lot of individual decisions that will be made, but I do think there are going to be a few players who say, yeah, I'll take the $150K now because I don't think I was going to make the roster anyway.
That's a good point. Or it's like, you know, you have X, like, you're like, I know, I think I'm getting cut. Like, I'm going to hang around. Like, I'm not, you know, like, I'm, you know, cause you could, I mean, you could get cut and just not sign. Like, if you, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you were due money.
No, 100%. Like, yeah. The expectation is that we're going to bring in a guy that gets cut, right? And that, like, oh, well, he'll be a free agent, so some of the team will sign him. Maybe, maybe not, because they've got all these guys who are in training camp with them that know their system maybe better than you. And then on top of that, they don't have maybe any preseason game to go off of, right?
Yeah.
And as of right now, we don't know if they're doing tryouts. So, you know, because of that, it then limits maybe the talent pool that you can tap into if you're a team that gets hit by COVID or you have a slew of injuries.
Okay. What about when – so what do you think this does for the Patriots? Just to stick with them real quickly. What do you think this does for the Patriots in 2020? Because, I mean, Hightower and Chung are – I mean, it's not like Stephon Gilmore and Cam Newton. But, I mean, they're pretty big players on that defense.
Let's not forget, though, too, they did draft Kyle Duggar in the second round.
Yep.
And Kyle Duggar was made to be, you know, the lower division football player that Isaiah Simmons was at Clemson.
Yeah.
And so we don't even know
Lenore if Patrick Chung necessarily. Baby. You ever been to Hickory, right. North Carolina?
No, I've not, but it's, I bet they've got some.
Got a lot of furniture. There's a brewery there. Some, massive.
I was just going to say, I bet they've got some great local IPAs.
They have it's Old Hickory Brewing from there. It's actually fantastic.
There you go. There you go. Used with real wood, real hickory. When we brew our beer.
We burn our wood down and shove it into a stout and then press it up nice for you.
That's right. And we beat the guy with the hickory stick while he's making it just to make sure we get every bit of hickory into our beer. I'm sorry. That's probably offensive to people who are from Hickory. I do a terrible Southern impression.
It's fine. You did a good job. Anyway. Yeah.
So my thing is, look, Chung signed a new contract. He was going to be a starter, we assume. But there's no saying that Duggar couldn't potentially overtake that spot. And then you look at Hightower. I mean, Hightower is the one to me that stands out. That's been a staple there. I would have a hard time believing Josh Uche is going to slide into that spot, or Anfernee Jennings, the third round pick from Bama. Not really the same player. They're both virtual. I think Uche would more fit that spot. But you know, it's not to say they have a year left on his deal. You know, who knows? We see Patriots make some surprising vet cuts. Cannon's the one that's interesting and I think could hurt him, because you don't have Dante Scarnecchia, their offensive line coach, there anymore. And it's not like they drafted an offensive lineman early. A lot of the guys they took, I think, are maybe more developmental guys or guys that they're going to have to kind of, you know, coach up here on the fly. So, that one could hurt them the most, especially with the new quarterback instead of more or Newton for that matter.
Okay. Of the other opt-outs, and by the way, we have a Josh Edwards, who's been on the show a bunch, is doing a team-by-team opt-out tracker. Not
of something, course.
Of course, yeah. I mean, we did franchise. I mean, we've been doing trackers for years, free agency, franchise tag, whatever. I mean, I never thought we'd be in an opt-out tracker world, but here we are. I'm going to give you some names. Name one that matters or two that matter. Whatever you think, you can yell at me in the middle.
I'll give you the one right now that sticks out the most.
Eddie Goldman?
Before you. No. Huh. Michael Pierce. That hurts the Vikings defense. He was a big signing for them. I think, you know, they need that for the interior of their defensive line. Like, look at the Buffalo Bills with Starla Tulele, for example, right? They brought in Vernon Butler, who's a former first round pick. You know, Sean McDermott's scheme. So they've got a guy to kind of.
Starla Tulele. Lotulele. Yeah. I mean.
Yeah. So they've got to kind of got to fill in for that void. Goldman's a loss, but I think Pierce, as far as, you know, where the Vikings are at, their defense took a step back last year. He, to me, was a huge piece, a huge signing where you kind of felt like, okay, he'll help solidify that group and have forced them to be better on first and second down. They're in third and longer, which would help out their secondary that struggled last year. So, he's the one right now that I look at and probably won't get talked about enough, but
yeah,
that's a big blow for the Vikings, in my opinion.
Other notable names, opting out, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif.
Laurent Duvernay-Tardif.
I think he's like a non
French Canadian, I believe.
Yeah. I'll give it to you. Laurent Canada Tardif. It is notable that the only medical professional in the sport is like, I'm good. I gotta go.
No. But I so that's not
and do his Hippocratic Oath thing.
Right. Yeah. And I talked to Dr. Myron, who's now a medical student at Harvard. And
friend of the podcast, Byron Roll, was on the podcast.
Friend of the podcast. He's been on the podcast. Had a chance to speak with him, and he echoed a very similar sentiment. Like, not many of these NFL players are going to have the chance to be a doctor and help out. But if you could, you would, right? Like, you'd gladly take the 150K and say, I'll push it off for a year. This is more important. I've been already treating this. I want to go back to helping and treating this. You know, if you had the ability to, I think you'd probably feel a little bit selfish or maybe a little bit wrong staying to play a game when you've got people that you can help from potentially save them from dying. So it's more understandable.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, the whole, like, if you're the type of person who went out and became a doctor when you were also a professional football player, you're probably not going to be like, when you start, like, you know, you do like you can plug in like different, I'm trying to think what it's called. I've never used one before. I used one for school, but it's like an Excel sheet that helps you weight your decision making. It's a matrix, yeah. A decision matrix. If you're Laurent or Myron, you're not exactly weighing like income as a huge factor. Like, it's a much bigger deal to you. You're not worried about making $5 million this year versus, it matters, but it's way more concerned about helping people if you went out and became a doctor in the middle of being a football player.
It's a moral decision. It's moral or it's ethical in that degree. And I do think in both their cases, you know, I think they've demonstrated that. Cause even in the case of Myron Roll, you know, he's looking to be a neurologist and instead he's kind of left where he was, I believe in his residency to actually go help. And so he's kind of, you know, stopped necessarily.
I think the hospital he was at, and he may be helping somewhere else now, but the hospital.
He's at Mass General.
Yeah. It was overwhelmed early on when the Northeast was getting peppered. So I don't know where it's at now, but I'm told that it's a good time to take a break. So, we'll break. And when we come back, we will talk about more matters related to football.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so we talked about all the guys who opted out. What about this offseason, Brady? Because we haven't really, I mean, you and I, we talk, we text, good friends. No.
FaceTime.
Yeah, have we FaceTimed?
We send voice notes every once in a while.
Yes, you do. You're the only person I send voice notes with, which is hilarious.
Well, because
to a lot of people?
A lot of people, yeah, because I'm on the front edge of where everyone eventually will be. So if you look at, like, for example, text messages, I was trying to send text messages back in college. Like, really? I saw a text message on my phone, and it was back when you had to, like, punch in, you know, you had to hit,
you
like,
use the QWERTY keypad, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I remember trying to send it back then. People were like, what are you doing? What is this? I'm like, it's an alternate form of email, but you get on your phone. And people were like, I don't want to do that. And then now it's like what everyone does. Yeah. I've gotten rid of voicemail. Voicemail is the most obsolete thing ever. Okay. You're going to call me and I'm going to see you at a missed call, right? We all have caller ID on our phones.
I hate voicemail.
And then, well, because it doesn't make any sense. And so then someone's going to leave a message telling you to call them back. They could text message you. So if you're inundated, you could see what they want and you can respond back that very moment, or you can respond, hey, I'll call you later. But I don't need to waste time to then go call my voicemail or listen to a voicemail you left to then call you back, or I get information sooner via text message. So what does voice note accomplish? Voice notes allow you to immediately respond back and leave a voice note message, much like you're doing with voicemail. It's just a faster way of doing it, very similar to text messages. So eventually people will get there. They're just not there yet.
Okay, I'm down for it. But I told my mom, I'm like, Mom, don't leave a voicemail. I won't check it. If I see I've missed your call, I will call you back.
But you know what you will check?
Text message.
A voice note.
Or, yeah.
And a voice note.
But the voice note shows up in the same thing.
Yeah. Exactly, because you're already there. You're already there.
If I got a voice note.
You understand it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, if my mom sends me a text, I'm just like, hey, will you please call me? And my dad's bad about this. He sends me, he's like, can you call me when you get a second? You're like, oh my God, Lee's dead. My grandmother was like, my grandmother's dead. That's gotta be it. I call him. He's like, do you have the recipe for those, meatball? It's like, what, why would you send me the, can you call me in a second?
Take this for example. Like here, Will, Coors Light called. They want their hat back. See, I just sent you a voicemail, but now it's in text message as a voice note.
Yeah. And there, I just got that right
there
on.
You go.
Shut up. Yeah. Attach it. One audio file. Oh my God. What was I going to say?
This is what the show is known for.
I know. So my mother-in-law loves to call. Like, she calls her husband.
Wonderful lady, by the way. Every time we talk, you tell me how much you love your mother-in-law. So you're a good son-in-law.
Love her. But she calls my wife multiple times per day. She calls her husband a substantial number of times per day, which is not unusual.
Really?
Yeah.
That's unusual. That's unusual to me.
Well, for our generation, but for their generation, they call. Like, she doesn't work. So anyway, she calls him a lot. But you know, on the iPhone, you have the automated, like, responses. You know what I'm saying? If somebody calls, it pops up four automated responses.
Yeah. You have custom. Them. Yeah.
Yes. But right. And I custom send, like, hey, I'm podcasting. I'll talk to you in a minute. One day we saw her text message thread with Carrie, who's my stepfather-in-law. And it is literally 42 in a row, I can't talk right now. So, like, she'll call him just like, I can't talk right now. She'll call him again, I can't talk right now. And it's like, they don't text, they call and they talk on the phone. So their text message thread is just boom, 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 boom. I can't talk right now, over and over and over again. And I laugh about it like crazy every time I think about it.
That poor lady. I mean, look, there's something to hearing someone's voice, the tone in which they speak with. Everyone's more respectful. Everyone's more respectful when they talk, you know, outside of leaving voice notes.
That's right. Yeah. When you're talking trash about the hat I'm wearing, cause I decided not to shower after playing tennis this afternoon. Anyway, how does this, you drafted in 08. Is that right?
07.
07. Okay. So you were in your physical prime at the 2011 lockout.
Yeah.
If you were in the middle of your career in the 2011 lockout, how does all of this compare at all, if it does, to the 2011 lockout?
No, it compares in the sense that, you know, you had to do everything on your own, you know, a lot of times. And then you try to do things as much as you could as a team. And so for us in 2011, you know, once the lockout hit, we had a new coach. Our offensive system was going to stay the same, boy. But, you know, we ended up, ironically enough, you know, contracting Lauren Lando, who's now the current strength coach in Denver, to work us out at Valor Christian. Valor Christian is well known there in part because Christian McCaffrey had played there. And Ed McCaffrey does a camp there. So that's where we would practice because we couldn't go to the facility. We couldn't work out. And so we'd go work out there. We'd go through, running drills and so forth and conditioning. And then we'd go through our own individual drills. And so I would bring in the installs, at that time. Adam Gase was our quarterback coach. So I'd pop on over to Goose's house and I'd go pick up whatever install we were missing out on, which, you know, in retrospect was 100% illegal, but, it was what it was. You know, I was trying to compete for a job and obviously, you know, Orton thought he was getting traded and Tim, you know, was kind of hit and miss if he was going to be there. So I tried to take my opportunity to be there and lead those guys. But, Brian Dawkins, I think, fronted the bill for it. And then Chris Cooper and I kind of led the offense. Dawkins had the defense and that's how we went about doing it. And look, we ended up, you know, winning, going 8-8, winning the division via tie and going into the playoffs. But I do think that summer kind of helped galvanize our team. You know, we were drastically different than what I saw the year before when Josh McDaniels got fired and Eric Sudisfield took over. There was a lot of fracturing and guys kind of going their own way. We could have done that in 2011. And I don't think we did because we were much closer as a group. We were training, you know, together on our own. No one was forcing us to be there. We're holding each other accountable. And that's what I think you're going to see from this season. The teams that, whether it's Tampa Bay with Tom Brady, and that was well, you know, documented, or some of the other teams that maybe haven't showcased themselves much, but have been working out together, training together. I think they're the ones that are going to hit the ground running and they're not going to go through the growing pains or issues adjusting to the season.
So with that in mind, who would you, I think we talked about this a little bit, but like, I think the Saints
are one.
The, Ravens, the Chiefs, obviously, and these are the top favorites. So that's kind of interesting too from that perspective, because there's a chance that those teams start out hot and it's just a top heavy season, you know?
which the AFC has you know, traditionally been that, right? Like, if we were going to pick two teams right now, regardless of the offseason or not, it'd be Kansas City and Baltimore. All right. And then you're kind of looking for, okay, who else? I think this year is going to be interesting because the teams that have continuity of system and of personnel are probably going to be the ones that benefit the most. Now, that doesn't throw Tampa Bay into that mix, right? You've got Tom Brady who's coming in. However, you know, Bruce Arians is making Tom Brady adjust to their system. It's everyone else that's going to know this system, work with the system. So, you know, they'll go as far as he can go and as far as, you know, he can handle with how much they want to put on his plate in this new system.
Right.
So I actually think that'll bode well for them. You look at Seattle, for example. I mean, come on. The addition of Jamal Adams, he's a perfect fit now for that team. You know, Russell's there.
What'd you think about Jamal Adams lighting Goose up in the press and then getting traded 24 hours later?
You know, and Woody Johnson, you know, and I think
Johnson probably deserves to be. I didn't even see what he said, but Woody Johnson has done a comical job as an NFL owner.
Well, he hasn't even been there the past few years, right? I mean, he's been an ambassador to the UK.
As an ambassador to the UK to make him look good.
Maybe they're better off than I. Who knows? But the point is, I think Jamal Adams had to go nuclear and do what he did in order to get out. Like Joe Douglas saying, well, if he didn't say anything publicly, you know, that didn't matter. Of course it mattered. Like he basically drew a line, went ahead and river jump skipped across it and said, I'm going to bash our head coach and our president and I'm going to force my way out. And he leveraged that into an opportunity. The Jets got a great deal out of it and the Seahawks get a player who I think is a perfect fit for what they do. And so I think it's going to work for both parties.
Well, but I'm curious. So Pete Prisco thinks, and I disagree with him. I should have pushed back a little bit harder, but we were late in the podcast when I did it. Yesterday's podcast, it's worth listening to. He thinks that Jamal Adams will be Cam Chancellor. To me, I think there's a better chance that he can be closer to Earl Thomas. I'm not saying he will be Earl Thomas, but I think, you don't think he has more range or more like?
No.
Okay. All right.
For starters, just when you look at the way that setup is of that team now, they're really trying to assemble the pieces of what they have with the Legion of Boom.
Right.
So they're trying to figure out cornerbacks that can be locked down quarterbacks. Shaq Griffin's one of those, right? They feel confident in him. You know, they're now, I mean, if Quentin Dunbar plays too, he could kind of play that, you know, Byron Maxwell, whoever else, but, you know, I'm not sure if you follow that situation, but, you know, if what's true of, no, and if what's true of what's being alleged happened, it's awful. And then the other issue is the attorney that's involved in the whole thing and the whole quote unquote alleged payoff. I mean, it's crazy, but stuff off the field aside, he had a really good season last year in Washington.
He's a great player.
He could be a really good addition if he can play. And then Jamal Adams would be the guy who plays more in the box and really more so than that. And the reason why I say he's not going to be Earl Thomas, will be Cam Chancellor, is look what the Cardinals did in the draft. They drafted a guy in Isaiah Simmons who could match up with George Kittle.
Yep.
George Kittle's the mismatch that every team in that division is trying to figure out.
All right, maybe Earl Thomas is saying he'll be more like Earl Thomas, for example.
You're trying to cover yourself. No, just let me finish.
Okay.
So if you want to figure out how to win the division, you have to figure out your biggest mismatch.
Sure.
And that's with the team that won it, and that's with Kittle. And so Jamal Adams, I think, provides them now the opportunity to be able to match up with him for years to come as Kittle's probably about ready to ink a long-term extension at some point here soon.
All right, well, I guess what I was saying is that I think people assume that Jamal Adams is going to come in and be like a de facto linebacker who occasionally blitzes the passer. He's more than that. He's a better player than that. Like, he can cover Kittle. He can get with George Kittle in coverage. I'm not saying he's.
Yeah, I mean, look, so could Cam Chancellor. I think Cam got that reputation because of how hard he hit and how big he was. You know, Jamal's not as big, but he hits hard. Another thing is look, if they're playing that scheme, he's going to be down in the box often. You know,
sure.
It's not all the time, but you know, you want to play with your strengths. And if you have cornerbacks who can lock down guys on the outside, and you've got a middle of the field defender that you feel like has good range, why would you waste Jamal Adams back there? You might do it from time to time to break tendencies, but you don't want to do it too much.
Yeah, I guess maybe my phrasing is wrong when I say that he'll be like Earl Thomas. I just feel like he's a little more diverse and athletic. And I'm not dogging Cam. Cam Chancellor was awesome. But I feel like people paint Cam Chancellor as a one-trick pony, whereas –
it was just what he was asked to do within that scheme. Okay. And he executed it really, really well.
Sure. He set the tone. I mean, that 2013 Broncos team. I mean, in the Super Bowl, he lit Demaryius Thomas up as hard as I've ever seen. He might get lit up.
He hit, and I still to this day, because I'm close with Eric Winston, I was watching film of Winston pulling back when he played tackle for the Cardinals. And Cam Chancellor was the force defender. So the force defender's job is to set the edge. He can't let anyone get outside of him. Right. And as Winston pulls, I watch Cam Chancellor uncork on him on like Eric, you've never seen before.
Yeah.
Who's a huge human being.
Yeah.
And I literally texted Eric, sent him the video. Sent him, I was like, how'd that feel? And he's like, not great. And he's like, could you believe that's a safety? And like literally Cam Chancellor had the uncanny ability for a guy, by the way, who played quarterback at Virginia Tech before he switched to defense, to absolutely unload on people. It was ridiculous.
Okay. So yeah, but I agree. The Seahawks are a team. Adding Jamal Adams is not going to disrupt their continuity. That's a team.
Well, by the way, so let's talk about the draft picks. What does it matter? They didn't even have a first round pick from like 2013 to 2015. They're picking like the logic Pete Carroll used when he was asked about it, saying, well, we're picking in the 20s. And so to get a guy like Jamal Adams in the draft, not only do we have to use our first round pick, we have to use a future first round pick and another player. So at that point, you're literally looking at the same compensation. Now you've got a proven commodity as opposed to a guy that you're hoping will end up being that guy.
Yeah. I think the Seahawks are being unfairly ravaged on this trade. Like I think it'll work out better for Seattle, especially in the short term. I mean, obviously.
No, it'll work out for both. I really do feel like this is one that we have to pick a winner because that's where our society is, but it works both ways.
Yeah. Winners right now. I'm not going to go there. Okay. So Alex Smith, what do you think about his comeback?
Dude, it's a miracle. I mean, it honestly is an incredible story. All jokes aside, I mean, Washington needs this right now, right? Their organization's been through a lot. They could use some positive news. Yeah. And look, honestly, this is the best thing for Dwayne Haskins. Like, I know Ron Rivera said, look, if he's healthy, you know, he's a part of the equation. Of course. But the future is Dwayne Haskins. Dan Snyder was a part of drafting him. I know Ron Rivera wasn't, the front office wasn't, but he's the guy. You got to see what you have in him. I just think Alex Smith being around, whether they're competing or just him being there every day, is awesome. And it's going to be good for Dwayne, and he'll grow from it, and he'll get better from it. So, look, whether or not he even can get off the pup and get on the active roster and all that, like what he's done already so far is a miracle, and he should feel good about it. And people within the Washington organization, all those who've helped him should feel good about it.
All right. And, lastly, because you have to go see your children. And I actually have to go feed my son a pizza. There's a decent chance he goes, where's my pizza?
Or he tackles you.
He might tackle me. Who knows? He runs. Yeah. He knows as soon as he comes to the stairs and yells. And if he doesn't hear me talking, because like if the guest is talking or like I'm being quiet on the show, he'll walk over to the top and he'll see me and be like, Dad, pizza. No! Aaron Rodgers was on Kyle Brandt's The Ringer podcast. Because we need more middle-aged white dudes with pie. No, I'm just kidding. Kyle's a friend of the show, and we don't really need
a good-looking dude. He's so talented.
He is very
talented. I love watching everything he does.
Yeah, I love Kyle. I've known Kyle. Kyle and I are the same age, and I think our sons, our oldest, he has a couple of kids, but his oldest son is like
the biggest difference is he was like a soap opera model star, and he's and then there's you.
So. I was just slamming toughies in college. Right, that's right.
Right.
Excuse me. Aaron Rodgers was on with Kyle on whatever Steve, whatever show is. Anyway, he does it. It's a 10-question game show. 10 questions to Kyle Brandt. That's what it is. I think and he was asked about the split. Like what's going to happen with, will they move on from Aaron Rodgers or will they sit their first round pick? He said, I think that's probably what happens, based on the circumstances around everything. Just look at the facts. They traded up. They drafted him. Obviously, they like him. They want to play him. And I get it. I really do. I don't harbor any ill will about it. Like, was I bummed out? Of course. Who wouldn't be? I wanted to play my entire career in Green Bay. I love the city. I grew up there. But look, I get it. I see it completely clearly. And I'm not bitter about it. It just kind of is what it is. What do you make of – I mean, because Rodgers has been frank and open and honest about this whole thing, and he clearly disappointed, but he's not afraid to let people know that.
No, which is drastically different than Brett Favre, right?
He has to act that way, though. Like, he can't act like Favre.
No. I mean, look, they're both being genuine to who they are. But I just think it's, for Packers fans, a big transition because you're watching this unfold like how it did with Brett and Aaron, where like Brett was maybe more behind the scenes or just quiet altogether, silent altogether. And Aaron, who was that guy, who was Jordan Love, is now going through it, but he handles it entirely different. You know, he'd rather be just thoughtful and honest and not put out there anything that, you know, would come back to bite him. And so the reality is, this is Trump's final year in Green Bay. And, you know, it's tough because Devin Funchess has now opted out. He was a potential option. They had a wide receiver, you know, aside from Davante Adams. And obviously they didn't do much in the draft to help him. And so it becomes even more difficult where in a year where you thought they'd be loading up to get the best out of him and also prepare for the future, they do nothing about it. They just draft his replacement. And so it's just kind of odd considering how close they were to playing in the NFC Championship game and maybe playing in the Super Bowl. And instead they acted like they were rebuilding. And so that to me is what's baffling on the outside. And honestly, I think this is a decision where, you know, who knows what's going to happen this year for Aaron in Green Bay. He'll probably be playing somewhere else after this year. And I think Brian Gutekunst is, you know, if this doesn't work out, man, he's going to be to blame for many, many years to come with how he potentially set this back.
Yeah, it's interesting because Gutekunst and Matt LaFleur are like, if this completely blows up in their face, they're sort of letting Mike McCarthy off the hook a little bit for like
100%
only winning one Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers. Like all of a sudden it becomes okay. Cause Ted Thompson and McCarthy and Mike Sherman, I guess, never got lit up for letting Brett Favre go while only winning one Super Bowl or only winning one Super Bowl with Brett Favre because you replace him with Aaron Rodgers, you know? And so it's like, all right, well, you can't be that mad. I mean, but now it's like if it doesn't work out and Jordan Love bombs, dangerous.
And it's not even so much Jordan Love. It's just the way you're going about doing it. Like while everyone is getting more speed, like look at what Denver did, getting more speed, getting more play and talent on the outside to match up with like a Kansas City within your division. Yep. Like Green Bay is like, no, we need to run the football. Let's get a 255, 60-pound running back. Let's get a guy who can play more of like hybrid fullback, extra, you know, off the ball tight end look. And you're going, wait, what? You're not getting any wide receivers? Like you're just going to let Davante Adams be double covered every single time?
You really like Alan Lazard, huh? You really like him that much?
Well, or Marquez Valdes-Scantling. And you can sell me on the theory of, well, we want to give them another year. We really feel like they're developing. How? There's no offseason. How do you think this guy's going to develop? So
where do you stand on Green Bay this year then?
Well, I still think they're the best in that division because of Aaron. And I still think if you look at the top NFC teams, it's Green Bay, it's New Orleans, Tampa, it's San Francisco, Seattle. And then you're kind of saying, all right, like who are we looking at in the NFC East? Are we really buying Dallas or Philly? Like Philly had they added a lot to the roster. There's a lot of things that I think they need to go right. But those are their two teams. So like that's the mix of teams we're talking about. I think if we're being honest with ourselves, who have a legitimate shot of going to the playoffs and winning a Super Bowl, or at least getting to a Super Bowl.
And that's what's disappointing is that they had a chance to add to what they had and instead sort of kept their ceiling, feels like pretty much the same.
Well, I guess I'd look at it this way. You lost to San Francisco almost the exact same way both times last season, right? And so instead of trying to counter them and saying, okay, let's do what Denver did. Let's do what Philly did. Let's draft a freaking wide receiver. Let's sign some wide receivers. Let's load up with speed. And so we can put up so many points on the board.
Force just go to get out of their base defense so they can't just like blitzkrieg you with pass rushers. I mean, some way.
So forget that for that matter, right? Just be able to put up so many points that you overwhelm San Francisco where like now Jimmy Garoppolo can't have a balanced attack. Now they can't run the football. They have to be in shotgun the whole time. Like now you stress their offense because he looks across the field and goes, oh, I have to take that guy on. If you want to play a slugfest with San Francisco, good luck. You're playing into their hand.
Yeah.
It looks like that's what they're doing. They're trying to mimic what San Francisco is doing. It's like, you don't win that way. You win how Kansas City did where, yeah, you might stink for three quarters, but when you have a special quarterback and special talent like Mahomes or Aaron Rodgers, dude, you give them all these weapons where you can come back at the end of a game like that, score quickly and make some big plays. The game is set up for that, you know, for that. Yeah. It's not set up to pound away, control the clock and run the football.
Also, you're Matt LaFleur, you're Kyle Shanahan's your mentor. You think you're going to outsmart him? Like, what are you, you're going to beat him at his own game? No, like your offense is creative, but it's not like his. I mean, it's not going to work. All right. It's a fun chat, Brady.
I missed it, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it too.
I will make sure and, crack a toughie for you.
Yes. Shotgun one. I wouldn't crack it. I'll
crack it on the side then with a key. I'll crack it with a key on the side and shotgun it. Thanks as always, buddy. Good talking to you.
Good talking to you, buddy.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.